Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something that, well, honestly, it impacts so many of us, maybe more than we think. The internet. It's amazing, right? Connection, knowledge, convenience. It's all there.
Absolutely. Video calls, groceries delivered, learning anything. It's transformed daily life.
But there's this other side, isn't there? A darker side that often gets overlooked, especially for older adults in our lives.
And it's serious. The numbers are, frankly, they're shocking. Just in 2024, Americans over 60 lost more than $4.8 billion to online scams.
$4.8
billion? Billion, yeah. And that's a 43% jump from the year before. We're seeing really similar worrying trends up in Canada, too.
Wow.
And look, it's not just the money, though that's devastating. It's about dignity. It's about trust being shattered. And sometimes it leads to a real loss of independence.
That's such a crucial point. So that's our mission today, really, a deep dive into, let's call it, scam-proofing the golden years. And this isn't about making anyone scared to go online. It's the opposite. It's about empowerment. For older adults, yes, but also for everyone who cares about them.
Exactly.
We want to unpack why they're often targeted, look at the common tricks scammers use, and crucially, explore ways we can help protect and empower them online, compassionately and effectively.
So if you've got an older parent, grandparent, neighbor, friend, anyone you care about navigating the online world, this conversation is definitely for you.
Okay, so those numbers, the 4.8 billion, the 43% increase, they're staggering.
Yeah.
But it makes me wonder why older adults specifically. I mean, scams feel like they could happen to anyone, right?
They certainly can, but there's a convergence of factors that often makes older adults more vulnerable. Part of it can be less lifelong familiarity with how quickly tech changes, you know? The subtle signs of a scam online might not be as obvious.
Right, things younger generations maybe take for granted.
Exactly, and many grew up in a time where, while a phone call or an official-looking letter was generally trustworthy, the default wasn't suspicion. Ah, okay. That makes sense.
Plus, they can sometimes be more trusting of figures who sound like they're an authority. Someone claiming to be from the bank or the government or tech support.
Mm.
And, you know, sometimes isolation plays a role. They might not have that easy access to a tech-savvy family member or friend. They can quickly ask, hey, does this look right to you?
That quick check-in can make all the difference.
It really can.
So thinking about that huge financial loss, that $4.8 billion figure from the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center, the IC3, which is basically the central spot in the U.S. for tracking this stuff, it just begs the question, what about the costs beyond the money, the hidden stuff?
Oh, absolutely. That's often the deeper wound, isn't it? The financial hit is bad enough, but the shame, the fear, the isolation that follows, it can be crushing.
Especially with certain types of scams.
Particularly with things like romance scams. Imagine building what you think is a real caring relationship online, maybe over months, and then finding out it was all a lie just to get money.
That's betrayal on such a personal level. Exactly. It's not just losing money. It feels like you were foolish, personally targeted. And that intense shame often leads victims to keep silent. They don't report it, they're embarrassed, or they worry their family will judge them, or worse, try to take away their independence, thinking they can't manage anymore.
Which creates this awful cycle, right? Silence makes them vulnerable again.
Precisely. It's a dangerous cycle, and the silence is exactly what scammers rely on.
So knowing that shame and isolation are such huge factors, what's the absolute first step for us? For family, for friends, for caregivers who want to help?
The most critical thing, create a safe space. No judgment. Period.
Easier said than done sometimes, but vital.
Absolutely vital. Our role isn't to scold or lecture. It's to listen, to offer support, and to help rebuild their confidence, making them feel safe enough to actually talk about it without fearing judgment or losing control over their lives. That's the key to breaking the cycle. Disarming the shame comes first.
Okay, so scammers are always changing things up, finding new tricks, but you mentioned there are common patterns, right?
Mm.
Let's try and home in on those. What should we be looking out for?
Yeah, the tactics evolve, but the underlying psychology is often the same. What's really fascinating and kind of chilling is how they weaponize basic human emotions.
Weaponize emotions. How so?
They're not really hacking computers as much as they're hacking our feelings. Fear, love, hope, urgency, even generosity. They find that emotional vulnerability first.
Ah, I see.
Once they've hooked you emotionally, made you scared or excited or feel obligated getting the money or the personal info, becomes almost secondary. It follows the emotional manipulation. Understanding that is key to empowering people to pause and think critically.
So if it's about triggering emotions, walk us through some of the most common ways they do that. What are the big ones?
Okay, well, phishing is huge. Those emails or texts that look like they're from your bank or maybe Amazon or the government, designed purely to get you to click a bad link or give up passwords or personal details.
Right, the fake login pages.
Yeah, exactly. Then there's fake tech support. You get a scary pop-up or maybe even a phone call claiming your computer has a virus. They sound very official, very urgent. They often want remote access to your computer.
And then they demand payment to fix a problem that wasn't even real.
Precisely. Yeah. Romance scams, as we mentioned, are incredibly cruel. Building fake relationships online, sometimes for months, gaining trust, manipulating emotions, and then the requests for money start. For emergencies, travel, something always comes up.
Heartbreaking.
It really is. Then you have the urgent pleas, the classic grandchild scam. Grandma, I'm in trouble. I need money wired right now. Don't tell mom and dad. Or someone pretending to be police needing bail money immediately.
Preying on that love and instinct to help family.
Mm-hmm. And finally, things like lottery or inheritance scams. You know, you've won millions. Just pay the small processing fee or tax first to collect your winnings. Too good to be true. Almost always is.
So it sounds like less about memorizing every scam variation and more about recognizing that feeling, right? That sudden urgency, the intense fear, the unbelievable luck, that unexpected affection coupled with a request. That's the real red flag, that pressure.
That's a great way to put it. Yes, recognizing the emotional manipulation attempt is crucial, which brings us to a really important point.
Yeah.
How do we talk about this with our loved ones, especially knowing how sensitive it is, how easily shame can creep in? We don't want to overwhelm them or make them feel, you know, lectured. Many older adults feel they should know this stuff already.
Right. That reluctance to ask for help is real. It's got to be about compassion, not complicated tech talk.
Mm. The sources we looked at suggested using analogies, which I think is brilliant.
Analogies? Like what?
Like explaining that a password is like the key to your house.
Yeah.
You wouldn't just hand it over to a stranger who knocks on the door, right?
Okay, yeah. That's good. Relatable. Or a phishing email is like that stranger pretending to be from the bank, asking to come inside and check your valuables. You'd say no, right? You'd call the bank yourself using the number you know.
Mm-hmm. Makes it tangible.
And even something like two-factor authentication, 2FA. Which sounds technical.
Yeah.
Just explain. It's like adding a second, different kind of lock on your front door.
Mm-hmm.
Even if someone gets the first key, they still can't get in without the second one.
Love that. Simple, clear.
And, you know, sharing our own close calls helps too. I mean, I almost fell for a fake text just last week. Looked exactly like it was from my bank. Said my account was frozen. My heart jumped for a second.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Sharing that vulnerability shows them it can happen to anyone, even people who think they're tech savvy. It normalizes being cautious.
That's such a powerful way to connect.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond analogies and sharing stories, it's about offering practical patient help, sitting down with them, walking through examples online at their pace.
Not just telling them what to do, but showing them.
Exactly. And celebrating the small wins. Like if they spot a suspicious email and ask you about it before clicking, that's huge. Or if they start using a password manager, fantastic. Reassure them constantly that it's okay to be unsure. It's okay to ask. You're there to help them navigate, not to take over.
Yeah, you're a guide, not a guard. One of the sources put it really well. Cybersecurity for seniors isn't just about protection. It's about preserving dignity, independence, and trust in an increasingly digital world.
That's beautifully said.
And it touches on something else.
Yeah.
That belief many older adults have that they're too smart or too careful to fall for these things, which ironically makes that gentle ongoing education even more crucial. We're all susceptible.
Absolutely. And this really links to the bigger picture, doesn't it? Making cybersecurity just a normal part of family conversation, not a one-off scary warning, but something you check in about regularly.
Like talking about locking the doors at night.
Kind of, yeah. When it's open, normal, and blame-free, they're so much more likely to say, hey, this weird thing happened online today, instead of hiding it because they feel embarrassed. One source mentioned creating safe, shame-free spaces for conversation. That empowers them.
Okay, but how do we actually start those conversations without making it feel like an interrogation or talking down to them?
Keep it casual, keep it open-ended, maybe ask something like, hey, has anyone weird called or emailed you lately asking for money or information? Just neutrally curious.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like you did, share your own experience. You won't believe this fake message I almost fell for. That opens the door naturally.
Makes it relatable, not accusatory.
Exactly. And always, always end with an open offer. Listen, if anything ever feels off or you're just not sure about a message or a call, please just call me first. We can figure it out together. No big deal.
Those little check-ins build that foundation of trust, so they do call before clicking or sending money. Okay, so beyond the conversations, what about practical habits? Simple things they can actually do.
Good question. There are some core basics. Strong, unique passwords for different sites, that's crucial. Maybe help them set up a password manager to make it easy.
Right.
Enable two-factor authentication, that second lock everywhere it's offered. Banks, email, social media, big security boost.
Right.
Teach extreme caution with links and attachments, especially from people they don't know, or even if it seems slightly weird from someone they do know.
Verify first.
Always verify. If a call or email seems suspicious, hang up or ignore the email. Then contact the company or person directly using a phone number or website you know is legitimate. Never use the contact info from the suspicious message.
That's a key takeaway. Don't trust the contact info in the potential scam itself.
Never. And finally, keep software updated. Those updates often patch security holes that scammers exploit. Phones, computers, tablets, keep them updated.
And if navigating settings is tricky for them,
offer to help. Sit down with them. Help turn on 2FA. Show them how to check for updates. Explain why it matters in simple terms. That hands-on support, that partnership is invaluable. It shows you're in it together.
It's good to remember, too, this doesn't all have to fall on the family. There's community support out there, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's growing, which is fantastic to see. Libraries, local senior centers, nonprofits. Many are stepping up with digital literacy programs tailored for older adults.
What kind of things do they offer?
Workshops on how to spot scams, one-on-one tech help sessions, sometimes pairing seniors with younger digital mentors, maybe even grandkids or student volunteers. Organizations like Get Cyber Safe in Canada or the National Cybersecurity Alliance in the U.S., they have workbooks like Then and Now, and groups like Cyber Seniors are great starting points for finding resources.
So thinking about that broader community effort and expert input, what really stands out to you? What's the core message there?
I was really struck by a quote from Lena Dabbitt. She's an executive director at Optiv Canada, and she used to be an RCMP cybercrime expert.
Okay, so she knows her stuff.
Definitely. She said essentially that digital change is happening incredibly fast, and it can be overwhelming, especially for seniors. We're asking them not to trust what they see and hear online, but are we giving them the right tools?
Good question.
Her point was that education needs to be relevant, delivered at the community level, in places where seniors feel comfortable and supported, not intimidated. And success isn't always some massive technological leap.
Right.
Success might just be someone attending a library workshop and going home to make their email password stronger, or finally turning on 2FA on their bank account. It's about those practical, incremental steps driven by community support.
That really underscores meeting people where they are, doesn't it? Listening, being patient, offering tailored help, not just a generic warning. Empathy is key.
Totally. And for listeners who want more really clear practical advice, I'd absolutely recommend the SANS OUCH newsletter. SANS is a top cybersecurity training group, but OUCH is written for everyone, super easy to understand.
Mm-hmm.
They break down security topics into plain English each month. Their July edition was specifically on protecting our seniors from scams. Really well done, very actionable tips. Worth checking out.
A good resource.
Huh.
Okay, so wrapping this up. For everyone listening who cares deeply about an older person in their life, what's the main thing you hope they take away from our deep dive today?
I think the ultimate goal here isn't just about protection, though that's vital. It's really about ensuring older adults can be part of our digital world with dignity. Digital inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
We owe it to them to provide the tools, the confidence, and that crucial community support so they can stay connected safely. If we don't, we risk isolating them even further from all the benefits the internet does offer.
That's a really powerful way to frame it. It comes back to that human-centric approach, right?
Yeah.
Swapping technical fear for confidence.
Yeah.
Replacing judgment with patience.
Exactly. When we approach these talks with empathy, when we listen without judgment, when we celebrate every small step forward, we're not just cutting down risk. We're actually rebuilding trust and strengthening those vital connections.
Making the digital world less scary and more accessible.
Because online safety shouldn't be some kind of luxury item only for the tech savvy, should it? It needs to be a fundamental right and honestly a shared responsibility, whatever our age.
So the final thought for everyone listening, what's just one small, open, trusting step you can take today to start or continue that conversation about online safety with an older person you care about? It might just be the most important digital connection you make all week.